This is Wilderness and Wildlife, presented by the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. This is a half-hour program featuring commentaries and interviews with wildlife and wilderness advocates relating to the unique natural environment that we enjoy in the wildlands of the West and across America. I'm your host, Ben Churchwell. Today, we are speaking with Judah Jamison from Wolfhaven International in Tenino, Washington. Judah is the lead animal care specialist at Wolfhaven and the liaison for the sanctuary's involvement in the Saving Animals from Extinction program for American Red Wolves, which will be the focus of our conversation today. Judah, thank you for joining us and sharing a bit about your work.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course, yeah. So could you tell us a little bit more about your background? How did you come to join Wolfhaven?
Well, I kind of tripped into this work, to be honest. I moved to Western Washington with my family in 2018, and I visited Wolfhaven. It was 10 minutes away from my house, and that was my first time ever seeing an American red wolf. Despite growing up in the Southeast, I had never heard of red wolves. I had never seen a red wolf, and it was love at first sight. I was struck by lightning. And I immediately wanted to contribute to this organization. So I started off as a volunteer and then began doing some education programs and volunteering with animal care and became an employee in 2019. So yeah. entirely by accident.
Sure. Yeah. That's incredible, though. So what does the day-to-day work of Wolf Recovery look like? Could you walk us through just your typical day in the life at Wolfhaven?
Well, a typical day in the life of Wolfhaven starts with making sure all of our animals are doing well. So our day starts off first light, early morning with morning rounds. And so what we're doing there is we are walking around our sanctuary, making sure that all the animals, their welfare is not changed overnight. No one's limping, no one's injured, no neurological status changes. And we hand out medications to those animals that need them. And then for our endangered species, many of our red wolves and Mexican wolves, which we house as well, are not viewable because they are kept behind visual barriers and they're so very shy that we then review the camera footage of them to get the same information that we need, making sure that everyone is doing well. Mm-hmm. So the start of the day is always just assessing every animal. After that, we know that our first priority has been met, which is making sure that all the animals are doing well. Then we make sure that there are no safety concerns. Like, we're in a very forested sanctuary. Are any limbs down? Is anyone digging a den under the fence? Is there anything safety-wise that we should manage? That is definitely step two. And then after that, the animal care team just works very hard at doing everything we need to maintain the sanctuary, maintain the wellness of the animals. Seasonally, we have to handle the animals for veterinary care and vaccinations. But we're just here to work for the wolves, to be honest. Whatever they need, that's what we provide.
Sure. Do you have a favorite part of that whole process?
I mean, honestly, my favorite part is just seeing them living their lives. Like, reviewing the remote footage is fabulous. We're not intervening with them whatsoever. We're just seeing how they're interacting with one another without us being present. And to me, that's the greatest joy.
Sure. So let's talk about red wolves. How does the current condition of red wolves compare to the historic range of the population?
Well, like all large carnivores, the population started off very large. The exact number we don't know, before, you know, human habitation grew to such large numbers, you know, on the continent. We do know that red wolves were found as far north as Pennsylvania, as far south as Florida, and as far west as Texas. So now today, though, the only wild population of red wolves is in a 5-county area in eastern North Carolina, in the eastern North Carolina red wolf population area. And in that area, there are only approximately 28 to 31 animals. So that's 28 to 31 animals in the wild. Additionally, there are 280 or so in under human care in 49 different institutions that are participating in the captive breeding program. So the numbers are far fewer, obviously, than the historical numbers, and we're working very hard to build back that population, but it's a slow process.
Sure, absolutely. A lot of our listeners are probably more familiar, being in the Gallatin region, most of them more familiar with the gray wolf, the discourse surrounding gray wolves and that whole recovery process. How do red wolves differ from gray wolves physically or behaviorally?
Red wolves are, first of all, I think most of the differences come down to size. Red wolves are smaller than gray wolves. Gray wolves can be 100 pounds or more. Red wolves typically are between 50 to 80 pounds. And their smaller body size means that they are going to be hunting smaller prey. So while some gray wolf packs can specialize in hunting elk or bison, red wolves are really limited in the size of animals they can take down. Sometimes a deer, but mostly they focus on smaller mammals, raccoons and rabbits and rodents. So typically, I mean, the major difference is size. They still, both gray wolves and red wolves live in family groups that are packs. Both of them are shy of humans and are typically the apex predator in their area, but they just have different dietary niches.
Sure. And that kind of gets at this next question, but how do red wolves fit into the broader ecosystem of North Carolina, and what role did they play historically play in the ecosystem of their natural range?
Well, there aren't very many of them in North Carolina, unfortunately. But historically, where red wolves would have existed, they would have had that apex predator role. So they would have controlled mesopredator populations. They would have controlled prey populations. Most of us now know that coyotes are everywhere, but in the southeast, where there once were red wolves, they excluded coyotes. Coyotes were just sort of kept out by that sort of line where their habitat overlapped with red wolves. Red wolves excluded coyotes, and as red wolf populations plummeted, coyotes moved in. In the current small population that there is in eastern North Carolina, red wolves do play an important role. I know that they do a really good job in controlling the invasive nutria that North Carolina finds that it's become a problem. But we really need more animals on the landscape to really have that impact that they had previously.
Absolutely. Speaking of coyotes, I understand that the that hybridization between coyotes and red wolves played a major part in the reduction of the red wolf population. How exactly does that play a role in the current state of their population?
It's not exactly that the hybridization played a role in reducing the population. It's that when the population became smaller and there were fewer red wolves on the landscape, red wolves began to hybridize with coyotes. Studies have shown that if there are enough red wolves out there, red wolves will always choose other red wolves for mates. But when there are only small numbers on the landscape, then red wolves have no choice but to breed with coyotes. And obviously, those hybrids do create a problem because, our Endangered Species Act only covers, pure species, not hybrids. And there's a lot being done now to prevent hybridization in the recovery area. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is spending a lot of time and energy sterilizing coyotes that are in the recovery area to prevent hybridization. And obviously, the more animals we release, the less that's going to be an issue.
Nice. Okay. As I said, most of our listeners are probably more familiar with the Gray Wolf Recovery Program. Before the reintroduction of gray wolves to Yellowstone, a similar reintroduction was conducted for red wolves in North Carolina in around the 1980s. How successful has that reintroduction been broadly in the decades since?
I think it's one thing that a lot of people don't realize is that the reintroduction of red wolves to North Carolina was actually the first carnivore reintroduction globally. So in 1987, The first red wolves were returned to the wild. And the later gray wolf reintroductions were largely modeled on those efforts. Unfortunately, given the location and given how it's the Southeast is very different than the West. The West has a lot of public land, it has a lot of open range, but in the Southeast, it's very human habitated. And the red wolf recovery has really struggled just from that reality. The releases initially in the 80s and 90s were going very well, and the population grew steadily, peaking at 120 wild red wolves in 2012. But due to a lot of factors, those numbers plummeted quite a bit, and by about 2020, there were only 7 left. And unlike gray wolves, red wolves have faced many different challenges. The one being that there was a strong voice of people that were questioning whether or not red wolves were a distinct species. So that actually sort of put a pause on the recovery for a number of years, as that was reviewed by the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine. So in 2019, they issued a report after a lengthy study that yes, American red wolves are a distinct species. They are not hybrids of other wolves. They are a distinct species and very critically endangered. And that report really galvanized a refresh, a restart of the recovery effort, which is really gaining steam in these last few years.
Nice. Okay. You mentioned the land use differences between where gray wolf introduction has happened versus where red wolf introduction has happened. Do we see a lot of human wolf conflict in those areas because of that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, even the wildlife refuges where the wolves are released, are agricultural lands. But also the recovery area critically has a major highway running through it, Highway 64, which is the only route in and out of the Outer Banks area in North Carolina. So the biggest issue currently for red wolves in the recovery area are road mortalities. Wolves are crossing the roads and they're getting hit. We just don't have the option in the Southeast that we have in, Yellowstone. I mean, there's like 22 square miles or something with absolutely no roads whatsoever. And the Southeast just doesn't have that land available. So the wolves have to coexist with roads, with cars. There's also hunting. Hunting is obviously, something that occurs broadly everywhere, But coyote hunting has unfortunately caused some in the past red wolf mortalities by mistaken identity. People don't understand that they're looking at a red wolf and they shoot the animal only to find out later.
So you work under the or the sanctuary broadly works under the Saving Animals from Extinction program or SAFE program. How does this program operate, and what role does Wolfhaven play in the SAFE program for red wolves?
So the SAFE program is for red wolves is currently we have 49 different institutions that participate. And under the SAFE program, what we do is we house and care for animals for the federal government, essentially. We provide and pay for all the care and feeding of these animals, which obviously allows them to have more resources for, the wild reintroductions and all the work that goes into that. And we are essentially, providing this care, but also breeding when we are recommended to by the geneticists that work for the SAFE program, as well as the population manager, and obviously care for those pups and rear them in a way, out of public view, if at all possible, so that they are release candidates. And that is an essential thing that the SAFE program is trying very hard to do, is to keep every animal as a potential for release or as a potential animal to raise other animals that may be released.
Sure. How does, Wolfhaven's Red Wolf breeding program operate?
Well, we house red wolves. We have red wolves here on site, and every year there's a meeting, and it's determined which animals are breeding and which are not based on genetics. So the population of red wolves, the population was founded with only 14 founders. So genetics are a very careful consideration. And if any of our pairs are recommended for breeding, then we just remove any barriers, which is typically separating the animals during breeding season, and we don't do that. And they have the opportunity to breed and have pups.
What are those concerns surrounding genetic diversity?
Well, any population with small numbers, runs the risk of, the genetics, a genetic bottleneck, or not having enough genetic diversity to maintain a healthy population. But even with a small number of founders, this careful work by the SAFE program has kept much of the genetic diversity that we began with going. To continue that in the future, though, we have to increase the numbers. Like for long-term genetic health, we're aiming for 330 in the short term and at least 400 in the long term to ensure that that genetic health continues for 100 years or more.
Sure. You mentioned that these protected species of wolves, they are kept more isolated than maybe others that are on the sanctuary. How are wolves cared for whilst keeping interactions with humans to a minimum?
We are very lucky. Many of our SAFE partners are zoos, so they have fewer options than we do as far as, keeping animals isolated. But given that we're a sanctuary, most of our animals are not in public view at any time. And we utilize the fact that we're in a very forested area. The sanctuary is very forested. And we use that vegetation as well as we build fences when necessary to just create visual barriers, first of all, so wolves don't see us coming and going. We house them in areas where human noise is lower. It's never zero, unfortunately. I mean, but we, instead of getting visuals of the animals in person, we use remote cameras that are running 24/7 so we can monitor without ever walking up to the enclosures. And we just try to keep our presence to a very minimum. Any food that we deliver, we throw it over the fence from behind a visual barrier if possible, except for large carcasses, which until we invent a catapult that can fly a deer over, we have to carry those in. The real answer to that is we just try to stay out of the way.
Sure.
We just the you know if we have to do repairs in an enclosure where that houses sensitive species, we do it as quickly as possible, as unobtrusively as possible, and we do any other potential foreseeable maintenance at the same time.
Why is the Tenino Sanctuary an optimal place to breed wolves for eventual release into the wild?
I think it just has to do with the fact that we have more capability of keeping the animals away from people. We don't have visitors to those parts of the sanctuary. We, as animal care, go as infrequently as possible. We're able to feed wild prey, which some zoos are challenged to do that. We are able to pick up roadkill and, things like that that just really aren't a part of the operations of other facilities. So it's just a combination of the natural diet, the vegetated natural habitats, and the lack of human interaction that I
Sure.
think sets us apart.
I am curious how the natural features of the sanctuary, given that you're located in Washington, compare to those that wolves might find post-release in North Carolina.
Well, that is a very that's an interesting question. I mean, we obviously we don't have the same ecosystem. We try to provide them with prey that would be the prey that they would find in the recovery area. The trees are different and the brush is different. Obviously, the rain cycles are different, but not so much so that they can't adapt. I think one of the things that's so incredible about the species is how adaptable they really are. I mean, we don't feed live prey in our sanctuary just for, the rules of fair chase. It's not fair to set a live animal free when they have no
Right.
possibility of escape. But, animals from under human care will go out into the wild and immediately hunt, having hunted very little, if at all. It's just the so a slight change in their habitat is not going to stop these animals from thriving.
And speaking of, American red wolves born at Wolf Haven have been released into the wild. Were these individuals monitored post-release? And if so, how did they do?
So there were no adult red wolves released from the SAFE program into the wild from 1995 to 2021 for a variety of reasons. In 2021, they started adult releases, and that year they released four animals, one of which was chosen from Wolf Haven, F2216. And she was released into the recovery area and did very well behaviorally. She was behaving just like a wild wolf and doing all the things she needed to do. But unfortunately, she was a road mortality within the first few weeks.
Jeez, okay.
Yes. Which was an unfortunate result for many of the first releases in the first couple of years. Since then, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has made an enormous effort to put up road signs. Letting people that drive through the area know that red wolves are there, fitted all the releases with bright orange collars that not only are GPS collars, but also just signal to drivers and to people that this is an endangered species. Please slow down. We've had a second animal be released from Wolf Haven, and that's M2191. He was chosen in 2023, despite being 7 years old, which is very old to choose for release. He was chosen because his behavior was so ideal. He was just very, very human avoidant. We could never see this animal in person, even after 7 years under our care. He was born here, lived here for 7 years. He was chosen to replace the breeding male of the male tail pack, which was a very important first pack that had had pups in a number of years in the wild. But unfortunately, the breeding male was again a road mortality.
Right.
So the wolf from Wolf Haven, M2191, we called him Finch. He was chosen for release, placed in an acclimation pen in on Alligator River National Wildlife Refuge in the territory of the milltail pack. And the pack visited him and got to know him, and he was released there during breeding season, and he successfully integrated with the pack, mated with the breeding female, and had eight pups. Unfortunately, none of those pups survived. But he has once again mated now with a new female this year and produced eight more pups, five of whom we know are still living. So very excited. He's been very
Good.
successful, and we couldn't be more proud.
Absolutely. Reportedly, the most recent litter of red wolves at Wolf Haven was born in the spring of 2023. How are the individuals from this litter doing now?
So we had two pups that were born in 2023. Sadly, one of the pups, the male, was diagnosed with osteosarcoma shortly after his first birthday. And so that was not survivable for him, and he was sadly euthanized. The remaining pup is a female, and she's still living with her parents and doing very well. Her parents have been recommended for breeding again this coming breeding season, so it's possible she'll get the opportunity to be an aunt to the new pups.
I am curious about the transportation process. Once red wolves are designated for release in North Carolina. What does the process of transporting them across the country look like?
Well, as you know, Washington State is very far from North Carolina. And believe it or not, the wolves fly commercial.
Oh.
So for the two animals we've sent to the recovery area, we have flown them on Alaska Airlines. Yes, it's a direct flight from Seattle to Raleigh. And then the U.S. Fish and Wildlife team comes and picks them up there. Obviously, the hard work is going to be capturing the animal for transport, loading them up. Obviously, we have to have a very fortified crate. We don't want that animal getting loose during the flight. So there's
Sure.
very strict requirements on the crate. But yeah, they fly commercial, just
Wow.
like us.
That's incredible. Do they go through security the same as us as well, or?
No, they have their own special security.
Okay. Okay. What are the most proponent current challenges facing American Red Wolves and the work of Wolf Haven broadly right now?
I mean, the biggest challenges for American Red Wolves, for gray wolves, I think for most carnivores is the same. It's how to coexist with humans. Much of the landscape is obviously inhabited by us and utilized by us. And if we want carnivores to thrive, we have to change some of our behavior. And it's a question of being willing and working together, not dictating how other people work or do their business, but coming together and really trying to compromise and make space for other species. That is truly the center of all this work. And it is something that, Wolf Haven works very hard with wolves in Washington, but also, wolves, American Red Wolves and Mexican wolves, like how to coexist.
How can listeners help or engage further in Wolf Haven's efforts?
I mean, you can engage with us through our social media, through our website. Come to see the sanctuary. There's a small part of sanctuary that's open to public visits. Get involved with wolf issues in an open-minded and empathetic way. Talk to your friends and neighbors. There are probably plenty of people in Montana that don't know that red wolves even exist. Have those conversations. Support organizations like Wolf Haven and others that are doing this work.
Absolutely. And as you said, I feel like many of the lessons that we can learn from your guys' efforts in wolf recovery can be derived to other large carnivores throughout the United States, and the world broadly. But that's about all I have. Judah, thank you so much for joining me today. It was great hearing about the work you're doing. It's very clear that you care very deeply about these animals, and I'm very appreciative for the work that you and your entire organization is doing.
Thank you so much.
Our guest today has been Judah Jameson from Wolf Haven International in Tenino, Washington. The wildlife narrative of American red wolves is a sister story to that of gray wolves in the Rocky Mountains. As recovery efforts move forward, it is necessary to follow both issues with empathy, a scientific focus, and an open mind. On Thursday, August 21st, the Montana Fish and Wildlife Commission meeting will host a discussion of several issues, including a proposed amendment to raise the hunting quota of wolves for the 2025-2026 hunting season. The decision made at this meeting could heavily impact Montana's current wolf population. In-person comments can be made at the meeting venue or at any FWP regional office throughout the state. This has been Wilderness and Wildlife, a presentation of the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. More information about the association and its activities can be found on its website, www.gallatinwildlife.org. To hear more of these half-hour interviews, go online to kgvm.org or to buzzsprout.com and scroll down to Wilderness and Wildlife. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Ben Churchwell.